Hello, and great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and we are live from Mineral Point Elementary School. Great to be with such. You might have noticed there that we have some curious youngsters, curious fourth graders from Mineral Point Elementary School, and they have all kinds of interesting questions about our state, and they want to learn about those things. And tell you what, we're going to try to answer a lot of those questions on the show today. And to get to the bottom of Wisconsin's rich history, I'm joined by Susan Kaya Slusser. She's the Southwest Sites Regional Director for the Wisconsin Historical Society. Susan, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Good morning.
Also welcoming Tara Tyndall. Tara is the Native American teacher leader at the Madison Metropolitan School District. And Tara, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you. I'd also like to greet the folks of the Ho-Chunk Nation, which I am a member of.
All right. I hope you will join in as you listen to these kids, the young children, ask their questions. You can join in with a question of your own. Maybe you want to know something about Wisconsin's history. And to do that, you just call 1-800-642-1234. And you know what? We're so glad to be here. I want to thank so much the Mineral Point fourth grade teachers and librarian for having us, and of course Susan and Tara for being here as well. And we're going to jump right in. We've got some things organized a little bit. One area we have is general history. It's kind of a basic way to start. We have a couple of students with questions about the name of our state. Josie and JC, go ahead with your questions.
Hi, my name is Josie, and my question was, how did Wisconsin get its name?
Hi, my name is JC, and my question is, what does the word Wisconsin mean?
All right, well, Susan, you want to start with, how did Wisconsin get its name?
Sure. So Wisconsin is, you know, full of water, rivers, the Wisconsin River, and of course the Mississippi River. And so these waterways have been bringing people to our area for hundreds of years. And Wisconsin is kind of a gathering point, and so the name Wisconsin is kind of an influence of Native and European settlers coming to this area that gets us our name Wisconsin. I think Tara's going to answer a little bit more about this.
This is an excellent question, and sometimes when you study history, you begin with a question, and often you end up with even more questions. It's very good to question history, and remember to keep questioning history. Don't forget there's always two or more sides of history, which is why I'm here. As a Native American and a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation who once occupied southern Wisconsin into both Illinois and Iowa, I grew up not knowing about or learning about the history of my people or about any of the other 11 tribes in Wisconsin. I, like you, had many questions, but when I went to school, I looked for answers in books in the library and I found none. Today, there are now books about our history, and more schools are willing to offer a more accurate history, providing more than one side. Growing up in a small town in Wisconsin, Black River Falls, I've always been curious about names, the meanings and origins of them. For example, my maiden name is Snowball. And usually as a child growing up, I was often teased about my last name. But I heard the story about my last name. In the early days of the pioneers and settlers, and my people were facing removal during the treaty era, there were federal agents who were responsible for handing out the annuities, also known as payments, and they'd ask for our names. Oftentimes, the translator did not fully understand the meaning of our names. Also, our languages do not translate well into the English language. So, what our family name actually was Walking Hail. And the translator didn't understand or didn't take the time, so he interpreted it as Snowball. Regarding the meaning of the word Wisconsin, there's many theories. Most include a native word mistranslated or misspelled into the present-day word Wisconsin. The most common theory, in the early days, around the 1600s, a French priest spent time at a native village known as Mascoutins, near present-day Portage, Wisconsin. He was accompanied by two Miami guides, and in his notes he wrote, "The river on which we embarked is called Muskusing. It is very wide and has a sandy bottom, which forms various shoals that render its navigation very difficult." Marquette, this priest, later shortened the name to Mascoutins, but gave no explanation on the meaning of the name. Since then, others offered definitions of the word Wisconsin. Here's a list of some of the possible meanings. Gatherings of waters. Small lodge of a beaver or muskrat. And in the Ho-Chunk, it is Nakusa.
Nakusa.
Nakusa is the Ho-Chunk word.
Well, let's take a look. Thank you for those comments, Tara. Let's take a look at the word Wisconsin from your point, Tara. Do you have some comments on the word Wisconsin?
That was my answer.
That was your answer. Yeah, so you got through the both questions at once. Mm-hmm. Susan, do you want to add anything?
No, it just makes us so grateful that we live in where we live, and it's such a diverse state, and I can't wait to answer some more of these kids' questions.
Let's take some more questions, and we'll go to natural history for a minute, and we have a student, Cole. Got a natural history question for us, Cole?
Hi, I'm Cole. What types of dinosaurs lived in Wisconsin?
What types of dinosaurs lived in Wisconsin? And Susan, you got anything for us on that one?
Well, I love that question. It's a great question. But unfortunately, Cole, I don't have the answer that you're going to want. We don't know. Why we don't know is because way back, you know, thousands and thousands, we're talking thousands, 65,000 years ago, you know, Wisconsin at one point was a very high landmass. And do you ever help your mom clean and shake the kitchen rug and the ripple effect that the rug makes? Well, Wisconsin was way high up, and, you know, we settled back down. And with the glaciers that came through, the time that dinosaurs would have been through here in Wisconsin, all of that bedrock is no longer here. It's eroded away. Now, we don't have any dinosaurs here, but we do have lots of fossils. And the trilobites, you can see those today. You find them like around here when you drive through Mineral Point, the cuts in the bedrock of Highway 151. You can find many, many fossils here because Wisconsin is an old inland sea. And when you come to visit us at Pendarvis next week, you can actually look, and in our limestone buildings, our rock walls, you will still see fossils in those walls today.
That's pretty cool. And we just talked about fossils, as a matter of fact, a couple of days ago on my radio show with some authors of a book about Wisconsin fossils, those near Milwaukee. Well, Ada, what have you got for us?
Hi, my name's Ada, and my question is, why wasn't part of Wisconsin covered in glaciers?
Well, we had part of the state covered in glaciers, but not all of it. What happened there, Susan?
Yes, so where we are right now in Mineral Point, we're part of the Driftless region, and that is southwest Wisconsin, part of Minnesota, northwest Illinois, and part of, you know, northeast Iowa. And what happened, if you take your hand, it's perfect because their hand looks like the state of Wisconsin, right? Can you hold up your hand? You see the peninsula of Door County there?
Everybody's got their
hands
up.
They all have their hands up. Well, when these lobes of the glaciers were coming down, our Driftless region kind of makes a donut hole. Because we are this high, we're in the highlands, and as the glaciers come down, we're not quite sure why, but these different lobes of the glacier just stop and kind of go around us. And we still remain all, and that's what, you know, water came through with all the streams. And so today in our area, we have these wonderful ravines and coulees and streams, but we don't have the drift. And the drift is what's left when those glaciers go back and recede. So that's why we are called the driftless region. And drift is rocks and all the kettle moraines and all the leftover remnants as the glaciers were pulling away all the tops of mountains. So we are in the driftless region.
That's pretty, pretty cool. Well, I know Jackson has a question as well, so let's go there. Hi, Jackson.
Hi, my name is Jackson, and I have a question. What rocks and minerals are in Wisconsin?
Well, there's a lot of rocks and minerals in Wisconsin, isn't there, Susan?
Yes, and there's a lot of rocks right here in Mineral Point. So our state rock is actually red granite. But our area here in Mineral Point, in the surrounding area, once again, you see the limestone, you see the sandstone, and a lot of metamorphic rocks left over, and those are all created by heat and pressure over long periods of time. But also in our area, we have, you know, the state mineral of, can anyone name the state mineral?
Whoa, lots of hands up there.
Jackson, what's the state mineral? Galena, yes.
Galena. Well, that's pretty good. With does that cover our natural history? Well, it doesn't cover our whole natural history, but it covers our natural history questions, I believe. How about Native American history? The first people who lived in Wisconsin were Native Americans. And I don't think we can understand our state without learning about the First Nations in Wisconsin. Let's have Grayson start.
Hi, my name is Grayson. Why are Paleo Native Americans a big part of Wisconsin's history?
All right. Susan and Tara, both on that one. Tara, do you want to give it a shot?
Sure.
As I understand it, Paleo Indians are the earliest human inhabitants of the Americas from as early as 40,000 years ago. And here in Wisconsin, the Native people were once 100% of the population of this area. In our Native culture, we are taught to respect our elders and our ancestors, those who came before us, as they lived and sacrificed for us to be here alive. Most of you might have heard of the Siberian land theory. And I wanted to share that most Native American tribes do not believe in this theory because we each have our own origin. For example, the Ho-Chunk Nation, we have stories that share how we arrived from the East. So this is the land bridge theory, is just that, it's a theory. As so, I said, we as Native people, we were the original inhabitants. And in fact, here in southern Wisconsin, as I had mentioned earlier, this is the Ho-Chunk ancestral land.
All right. Let's take another question. Emily? I've got that, yeah.
My name is Emily. How did Wisconsin Native Americans' lives change when the pioneers came to Wisconsin?
All right. How did the Wisconsin Native Americans' lives change when the pioneers came to Wisconsin? Well, Tara, we'll go back to you for that. That could take a long time to answer that question for sure, but...
First of all, I'd like to share that Wisconsin shared the same history as tribes across the country. All tribes across the country experienced a lot of loss during this time. For example, we lost lives due to disease. A lot of our people lacked the immunity to European diseases. For example, smallpox was especially horrendous on our tribes. We still participated in many of our lifestyles of hunting and gathering, and the Ho-Chunk people were farmers also. We farmed corn. As the fur trading began, our tribes began participating in fur trading, so we began hunting for muskrats and beaver and collecting those hides for trading. we enjoyed the material that we would trade for. For example, we needed the knives. We needed the metal kettles for food. We enjoyed the glass beads and needles to make our clothing. However, as more and more settlers arrived and moved into our land, this meant that our people had less and less land to occupy. So we were moved increasingly, and we were often relocated outside of our native homes, which meant that our natural lifestyle was interrupted. The natural lifestyle that I'm speaking about is that we lived by the seasons. We had a winter camp and a summer camp. We went to where the food was. And during the summer, for example, we would camp out near a river where there was easy access to fish, because fish was one of our huge parts of our diet. We also respected the laws of nature. For example, in the summertime, there was no hunting of deer, because that was the time when the deers were mating and were having babies. So we respected that about nature, and we only took what we needed to survive.
Thank you very much for that answer, and thanks for those questions. And we have many more questions to come here. We are talking today at the Mineral Point Elementary School. We've got 50 Mineral Point students here, and two guests for you as well. Susan Kaya Slusser, Southwest Sites Regional Director for the Wisconsin Historical Society, and Tara Tyndall, who is a Native American teacher leader at the Madison Metropolitan School District. Chloe is going to have a question for us, but first, there's this. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here as we broadcast live from the Mineral Point Elementary School. And if you want to look at some of the best-looking fourth graders in all of Wisconsin, you can just go to the Ideas Network Facebook page, because we have a live show today on Facebook. So you guys can... Hey there. They are a handsome bunch, I can tell you that for sure. And we're having fun talking with them and answering the questions that they have about Wisconsin and our history. And we've been dealing with Native American history a little bit here now. And Chloe from Mineral Point fourth grade has a question.
Hi, my name's Chloe. What was a Native American's favorite thing to do back in the 1700s?
All right, Tara, what was the favorite thing to do? You weren't around then, but you probably...
As I said before, my people, the Ho-Chunk people, were, and most Native people across Wisconsin and across the country, we were highly family and community-oriented, which meant that our families meant the world to us, as did our communities and our villages. We spent a lot of our time working hard to meet the needs of our families and our communities, and we worked together. One of our strong values that we have is called reciprocity, which means that we depended on each other for survival. I'll give you an example from my own childhood. Growing up, I often lived with my grandmother, and she would also have visitors come over. Visitors would come stop in, and sometimes they'd stay for days. And the first thing that my grandma would do is she would offer them some food. And me, being 10 year old, I would also think, how long is this person going to stay? But after a while, my grandma noticed me and how my feelings about these visitors. And what she told me was this. She said that when people come to visit you and they offer to help you and do work around your house, then you always welcome them. And what that taught me was that We always help each other out, no matter where we are. And that is a tradition that has survived over the generations. Again, we lived off the nature. We moved with the seasons. We gathered berries. We knew my ancestors knew the best spots for hunting and gathering berries and planting corn. Corn was one of our major foods.
There you go. Thank you for that answer and for the question. And here's another student. I think Lily is up next with a question for you. Hi.
Hi, my name's Lily, and my question is, how do they name each town in Wisconsin?
How did they name each town in Wisconsin? There are a lot of different ways that towns got named, I think. Susan, anything on that, or Tara?
Well, I live in Dodgeville, just up the road, and of course, who's Dodgeville named after? Does anyone answer that question?
Jason? Everybody raises their hand.
Governor Henry Dodge?
Yes, our first territorial governor, Henry Dodge. And so a lot of the towns in this area named after people coming to the area, people that were settling, but there is also the influence of the different cultures that were in our area. Just to the south of Mineral Point, we have New Glarus, settled by, you know, Swiss immigrants coming to our region. But also we do have the influence of the Native American language. One of my sites is located in Prairie du Chien, or Prairie du Chien, as the French would have called it. And that is named after Prairie of the Dog, named after a tribe of the Sauk and Fox Indians. And Tara, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I'd like to add that here in southern Wisconsin, the original tribes that resided here, as well as the Ho-Chunk. And by the way, the Ho-Chunk are related to the Sioux. We're also related to the Ponca, the Oto, and the Omaha. Other tribes that resided in this area include Potawatomi, Menominee, and Ojibwe, and the Sac and Fox. So many of our names that sound perhaps Native are these Native words that are maybe mistranslated into the present-day name. Oftentimes we have a city that does not have a Native name, but our tribal people have a Native name for that city. For example, Madison, Wisconsin. The Ho-Chunk Nation have a name for this city. We call it Dajope, which means four lakes. Other cities that I'm aware of that have Ho-Chunk names is Decorah, Iowa. That is a family name that still exists today in Wisconsin, Winnebago, or Ho-Chunk Nation. Another name is Waukon, Iowa. And I can share a little bit about our story about how these two cities came to be, is that during the 1850s, the Ho-Chunk Nation faced removal, and we were moved across several states. One of them was Iowa. And along the way, people would either stay in those places. They were tired of moving, so they simply stayed there. And that is how those cities got the name that was related to a Ho-Chunk person.
We had an email. And by the way, if you have a question or comment, I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. I had an email from Douglas who asks, how many Native languages exist in Wisconsin, and have we lost some over time?
Thank you for that question. At this time, we have 12 Wisconsin tribes. 11 of them are federally recognized. Each of these tribes has their own language, although there is 6 tribes that are Ojibwe, and they all have similar dialects.
All right. And let's take a question or two about where we are. Mineral Point, Ronica.
Hi, my name is Ronica. Why is Mineral Point called Mineral Point?
All right, well, Susan?
Sure, it gets back to our topography. We are located in this beautiful, once again, driftless region. And if you drive around Mineral Point, when I first moved to Mineral Point 2 years ago for my job, I got lost a lot. A lot of streets go up, come back down, cross over. And it's back to just the gathering of the point. We have historical documents where it talks about the early settlers coming to mine this region, and they talk about meeting at the point. So it's just this location. Of course, the mineral point aspect, the mineral coming from it, is after the galena or the lead. And also when these miners were coming, they weren't calling this lead always. It was the mineral. They were digging after the mineral, going after the mineral. And so that's why we get the name of Mineral Point. And I actually, Larry, do have some lead that we can pass around for the kids to take a look at. And the lead
pretty
is
cool.
Used for shot, early uses, the shot for ammunition for the guns, used in early paint. Fortunately, we still have lead in some of our paint today. But we can pass around. And when the miners were first coming, a lot of this could be done surface mining. This was readily available. They talked about just tripping over it when they arrived in the area. And then, you know, the British influence and the Cornish influence of our community were these people were coming from the country where countries where mining was very well established. They were able to really get down and get into the mines and start retrieving this rich source. But of course, it wasn't always just the Euro-Americans that were doing it. The Native Americans were mining in this region before these folks came in.
All right, so we'll pass those around. I have the shot here. I remember in my eighth grade class trip, we went to Shot Tower Hill, and we're told about the making of shot at that. It was really a cool place, for sure. Well, we have some other questions as well. I think Clayton?
Hi, my name is Clayton, and why did the Mineral Point Railroad stop?
All right, we had a Mineral Point Railroad, and it stopped. Why the heck did it stop?
It did stop. So the railroad comes to town. They start to try and establish a railroad in the early 1850s, and it comes to town from Warren, Illinois, of all places, to Mineral Point in 1857. And once again, the main purpose of bringing that rail line here was to ship the lead back down to southern Illinois to get the lead dispersed out to the manufacturing areas and getting the line connected to Chicago. So the lead that was being mined in this region was going all over the country. And once the lead mining dies off in this area, there's other minerals that we're extracting from the earth, and the main one was zinc. In the early 1930s, Mineral Point had America's largest zinc mine in our country. I'm not sure if many people know that.
I didn't know that.
And so that's a heyday. So although the lead mining dies off, we start to get into copper mining as well, zinc mining. And it's after kind of the failure of the zinc mines is when we start to see the decline of the use of the railroad in our area. But up until 1984, we still had rail lines, and it was after 1984 where they start to take up the tracks in our area, mainly because Wisconsin has one of the best road systems in our country.
We have an email question that I wanted to bring up from somebody who wanted to know if you could talk about the history of badgers in Mineral Point and perhaps all of Wisconsin. Susan, you want to take a crack at that?
Sure, and this is something that these fourth graders will hear once again when they come on their field trip to visit us. But so the badger is our state animal, and when you think about that, you think of maybe Bucky Badger. But this all goes back to mining, and when these early miners were coming into the area, some travelers who are writing in the journals documenting their visits to the area talk about these men burrowing into the side of the hills, and it looked like a badger. And then also some of these men had to create quick and kind of crude housing to get through the seasons, because sometimes it was a seasonal job. They would come up, do the mining, and go back to mainly southern Illinois for the hard winters. And so they would create what were called badger huts, which were leftover diggings where they would cover with branches and limbs, and if they could come across any lumber, to create these badger huts. And that's where we get the nicknamed the Badger State, a throwback to our early lead mining days.
All right, and as you listen in to our guests, to our students asking questions, what about you? You have a question about the history of Wisconsin? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Love to hear from you. Or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. So give an all, give a call, shoot an email. And in the meantime, we'll go back to our students here. And we're going to turn to some demographics. We should probably talk about some basic information and symbols of Wisconsin. And Alex, a student here first for us.
Hi, my name is Alex, and I have a question. How exactly big is Wisconsin?
That's a great question. So going off of the 2010 census records, Wisconsin has about 5,700,000 residents in our state of Wisconsin. And it's just over 65,000 square miles in size. So that makes us the 23rd largest state in our country. So to put that in perspective versus some of the other states, Wisconsin could fit 10 times into Alaska. And Texas is about four times. Wisconsin could go four times into the state of Texas. We're a big state, but not the biggest.
Not by any means, and the biggest is, of course, not Texas, is it, Susan?
No.
What state, kids, what state's the biggest state?
Alaska.
You know, I once had a former student of mine was from Alaska, and he went back to Alaska, and he went to work for their Department of Natural Resources, and he was in charge of the Department of Natural Resources for Alaska, the North Slope. And the North Slope of Alaska is bigger than Wisconsin. So he had a pretty big territory. Well, we have some more questions here, and we'll get to, let's take another one. Xander, I think, is up with a question for us about demography, or demographic and symbols. Let's go there. Hi.
Hi, my name is Xander. What do the symbols mean on the Wisconsin flag?
All right, and there are, Susan, let's go back to you for that. There are a lot of symbols on that. You look at our flag and you look really closely, there is a lot there.
There is a lot. It's a very busy flag. So of course, it has the blue field, but on it, it has a lot of information that talks about what makes Wisconsin, Wisconsin. It, of course, has our state motto, which is Forward, which is made in part by our first governor of our state, Governor Nelson. And we have, once again, the state animal, or the badger. And then we have a plow, which, of course, represents our rich agricultural history of our state, and a pick and shovel, once again, getting back to the mining. But we have an arm and hammer, because Wisconsin's also known as a great manufacturing state. And then I'm going to ask another question of one of the students. Chloe. Chloe, why do you think there's an anchor? Why is there an anchor on the state flag?
Chloe, do you know why? Chloe, you've got, Chloe's perplexed. Oh, someone else back there has an answer.
Maybe because we have a lot of water in our state.
We do. We have the Great Lakes, of course, but also the Mississippi River and the Wisconsin River. So it's a kind of a shout out to all of our shipping industry for the state of Wisconsin. And that's why we also have a sailor on the state flag and also a miner on our state flag. Really trying to represent, once again, the rich history of, you know, what our state produces. And there are 13 lead bars on the flag. Can anyone tell me what they think? Why the number 13?
Why do you think there are 13? There are lots of hands going up here. And let's, here comes some.
Maybe there are 13 states.
What's your name?
Leah Rabb.
Leah, okay. She says maybe there are because of there are 13 states?
Yes, that is a throwback to acknowledging the 13 original colonies of our country. So there's a lot of meaning of our state flag and our state symbol as well. And you see some of these on our state quarter that we had produced in 2004. But, of course, in the state quarter, what's the biggest symbol on our state quarter? Does anyone remember?
The biggest symbol.
You flip the quarter over. What do you see?
The cow.
The cow.
And we may have a question about cows coming up here in a bit. Anything else on the flag?
Oh, my goodness, yes. Of course, the year that we became a state, 1848. But can anyone tell me when we became a territory?
Well, there are a lot of smart kids out here. Lots
yes,
of kids
all
are
those
raising.
Hands shooting
all
up.
The hands are shooting up. Maureen is running around through the crowd.
May 29th.
Well, you actually stumped me there. I think it is in May. But what year did we become a territory? Remember when Henry Dodge is meeting in Belmont where we have First Capital?
1863.
You've got it reversed.
1836.
Yes, exactly. Yes, that's when the territorial legislators met at First Capital in Belmont, Wisconsin, to set what is now the formation of our state of Wisconsin.
Wow. Well, let's take a call here. Jane in Elkhorn has a question. So, Jane, what's on your mind?
Well, I worked for a year at a place called the Webster House Museum, and I also was fielding questions from fourth graders. But I don't know how widely known Mr. J.P. Webster, Joseph Philbert Webster, is. He wrote the hymn In the Sweet By and By, which is still being sung. And he also wrote the song Lorena. And that one was a favorite between with the Southerners and the Northerners during the Civil War. And General John Morgan, said he would pay handsomely for the person who shot the composer of that song because it caused his Southern troops to desert.
Oh, well, that's a cool piece of history. Gene, thank you. That's something we all learn. Everybody in this room, I think, learned something just this minute. Wow, it's wonderful. It's really fun. You know, isn't it fun talking about our state and our history? You may have a kind of an interesting piece of history about your own part of the state. We'd love to hear that as well. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you have a question about the state, we'd like that too. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. Talking at Mineral Point Elementary School today, we have 50 fourth graders from Mineral Point, bright kids, and it's fun to have them. And two guests, Susan Kaya Slusser, the Southwest Sites Regional Director for the Wisconsin Historical Society. Tara Tyndall is the Native American teacher leader at the Madison Metropolitan School District. I'm Larry Mueller, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. A little history lesson about Wisconsin here on the Ideas Network today. Larry Mueller here as we broadcast from the Mineral Point Elementary School with our two guests, Susan Kaya Slusser, who is the Southwest Sites Regional Director for the Wisconsin Historical Society, and Tara Tyndall, Native American teacher leader at the Madison Metropolitan School District. You may have some questions about Wisconsin history, or you may have a little interesting fact about your own town. We've heard a little about Mineral Point and learning about the state as a whole. Questions or comments, give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. And Jill Nadeau, our normal producer, is doing a little video work for us today. And we are actually carrying this live on our Ideas Network Facebook page. So if you want to see what it looks like in Mineral Point with all these kids, and oh, they're clapping now. Yeah, there they are. You can go to our Ideas Network Facebook page, WPR.org. Is it slash Larry or do we just have, slash Larry. And you will be able to watch live as we do this. Again, join in 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Sarah emailed and wondered what you folks could tell us about the wildlife in Wisconsin. What species were here when Wisconsin became a state compared to the species that are here now? And a lot of the species that were here back then are still here. A few are not. And I'm sure that Susan has the answer to virtually every part of this question.
Well, so I'm trying to think of like, so one animal I can tell you for sure, it's actually a bird. You know, things, especially around the turn of the century, 1800s, going into early 1900s, manufacturing. Cheap goods were readily available. Furs were being used, but feathers, bird feathers as well. And the ladies at the time, hats. Hats were, you did not leave your house without a hat, or you were not considered a lady. And so we were starting to lose like vast populations of the birds because of these hatting factories. And so one bird, can anyone tell me the answer? What bird went to extinction in the state of Wisconsin because of these hats?
What bird? And we give us your name and answer.
My name's Tyson. I think it's the dodo bird.
Now, that is a bird that I do believe is extinct. I don't think it was ever in Wisconsin. But I'm talking about the passenger pigeon. And there are many monuments in Wisconsin because people realize that this had to stop. We had to stop over-hunting and over-killing these animals just for our own personal consumption. But many of the other animals once were depleted but have made a comeback, like the turkey. Right now, elk are being raised in Kentucky and are being reintroduced to northern Wisconsin. The white-tailed deer is making a huge comeback, and I just hear that for the first time, we don't have to have a buck-only hunting for the 2019 hunt. So, yeah, so a lot of the animals that were here, that have been here for centuries, are still with us today. Fishing is huge for our state. And, of course, can anyone tell me what the state fish is?
All right.
The muskellunge.
That is right.
Oh, that's great. Yes, not just the muskie, but the muskellunge. So, yes, so I can't, I'm not sure if I can answer it any better than that. Tara, do you have anything?
I could add what probably most of you already know about the native wildlife that exists here is the deer, which in our language, Ho-Chunk, we call deer the cha, elk, moose in the north. And as a matter of fact, the Ho-Chunk Nation, as I had mentioned earlier, we had large gardens that we planted Indian corn and squash. So those are actually native to this area.
Very good. Well, we have another student with a question. I think Haley has something for us, so let's go there, and then we'll take some calls as well.
Hi, my name is Haley, and my question is, who invented the state dog?
I love that question when I saw that come across. First, I want a show of hands in this room. Who has a dog?
Almost everyone here has a dog.
We all love our dogs. But no, it was, the state dog is actually the American Water Spaniel. And it was a breed that was created in Wisconsin in the late 1800s. And the main purpose of this dog was for hunting. Now, let's think about that name, American Water Spaniel. Can anyone tell me what type of hunting you'd want to use this dog for?
Probably for hunting ducks and stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. So this dog was bred specifically. It's a smaller, compact dog. It's strong and it has curly, like dark curly hair. So it kind of makes its coat kind of water resistant. So it can dive into the streams and lakes to fetch the fowl. But also a fun fact that I learned when I was looking up this question is they actually have webbing in between their toes on their paws to make them great swimmers. So yes, the American Water Spaniel is our state dog.
Very, very cool. Well, we have some callers, quite a few callers online. So let's take a call. And Mary in Menasha, I believe, is up first. So let's go there. Mary, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. My question has to do with effigy mounds. At what time, one time, Wisconsin may have had as many as 30,000. But nobody really seems to know what the purpose is. There are lots of theories, and I'm wondering if your guests have any theories about that.
Sure. Tara, let's turn to you for that. Comments?
I believe the Ho-Chunk Nation has beliefs about the effigy mounds, that they are sacred burial sites, and that we, our role with in respect to the mounds is that we are supposed to protect them and honor them as our ancestors.
And that's a great question and answer. Thank you, Mary, for that. Let's take another call here. Dave in Toma, your turn. Hi, Dave.
Okay. Well, a quick aside, the passenger pigeon thing in Babcock, Wisconsin, there's a plaque that says that they killed the last one there in Babcock, Wisconsin. And it's attached to a plaque that says they had a lion hunt, an elephant hunt there once upon a time when a circus train crashed there.
All right, so I know you just didn't call to tell us that about the passenger pigeon or the lions and tigers. What else did you have for us?
My question was, how much land did we give up so that Illinois could have Chicago?
There was a lot of horse trading that went on back then. There was, at one point, Chicago was part of Wisconsin, and at one point, the upper peninsula of Michigan was also part of Wisconsin, and there was a lot of horse trading that went on, and I'm not so sure it was Illinois wanting to be have Chicago, or if it was Wisconsin not wanting to have it. You never quite know. I think there was a lot of horse trading going on. At the time, Chicago was actually not a huge city then. Chicago was, the reason there's a big city there now is that Chicago was actually built on the most fertile land, the fertilest land in the whole Midwest. And so it was where farming got going very strongly. And then as more people came in to farm, the town grew up kind of around that agricultural area. And then with the lake, Lake Michigan, coming in, there was a great port there, so you could ships could come in there as well. And so it became quite a trade location. And as for the horse trading that went on, I've heard a number of different stories, and none of them are pleasant, really, about why we did not wind up with Chicago. But a lot of times Wisconsin people say, we didn't want Chicago, so we gave it to Illinois. All right, let's take another question. Connie, well, wait a minute. Yeah, we got maybe time for Connie in Portage. Hi, Connie.
Hi. I was wondering if the children knew what was different about the Fox River.
What is different about the Fox River? Now, the Fox River, where is the Fox River? It's in northern Wisconsin, isn't it? Part of it?
My name is Riley. I think it goes up instead of down.
You're exactly right.
Hi, my name is Matt, and I agree with Riley that it goes up instead of down, and people don't know why.
Yeah. Why do you think that's the case? What is the Earth like? What is the Earth like?
It's flat, and sometimes there's mountains.
Well, yeah, but if you look at the whole globe, what is the Earth like?
My name's Cooper, and it's round.
Yeah, and it's round. And isn't there a little bit of curvature? And at some point, things have to kind of go in the other direction, don't they?
My name is Nathan, and I think it's because of the elevation of the planet, like the hills that we have, I think that's causing it to go up instead of down.
Well, I think it's more the curve of the whole Earth. You have to kind of think of how even here in Wisconsin, we're curving from north to south. And at some point, we're going more north than we are south. And so it's a little lower on that side. And so the water runs the other way. Now, I always wondered if I could find that one point in a river where it went from running north to running south. That's something that I wondered, and I also wonder why I'm talking about this, because I'm supposed to be reminding you all that we are here in Mineral Point, Wisconsin. We're having so much fun talking with the fourth graders from Mineral Point Elementary School, and also with our two guests today, Susan Kaya Slusser, and also with Tara Tyndall. Tara's the Native American teacher leader at Madison Metropolitan School District. Susan is the Southwest Sites Regional Director for the Wisconsin Historical Society. We are going to take a quick break here. And again, if you want to you want to see us in person, go to the Ideas Network Facebook page, wpr.org/Larry, and there's a live feed going on. Jill Nadeau, our producer, is taking care of that right now as we speak. But we all need to know what's on in the news. So let's take a look at the news, and then we'll be back with our fourth graders. Larry Mueller here, broadcasting from the Mineral Point Elementary School. We're having a lot of fun learning a lot of interesting things about Mineral Point and about Wisconsin in general, and with our 50 young fourth graders from the Mineral Point Grade School. Susan Kaya Slusser, our guest, one of our guests, she's the Southwest Sites Regional Director for the Wisconsin Historical Society. Tara Tyndall is the Native American teacher leader at the Madison Metropolitan School District. So, what about you? What do you want to know about Wisconsin? Is there a person, event, or a place you think is especially important to our state's history? You want to talk about that too, or have a question? Love to hear from you. You can give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Don't forget, we're broadcasting this live as well on Facebook. Go to our Ideas Network Facebook page, wpr.org/Larry, and you can watch as Jill Nadeau has her wonderful camera, very expensive camera, thousands of dollars that she has here. And as I'm mentioning Jill, I want to say a real special thanks to the WPR Wisconsin team, Jane Rotunda, Chris Molina, Tom Blaine as well, Tyler Ditter, and then our two guests, of course, Susan and Tara, and the fourth grade students and teachers of Mineral Point Elementary School. You couldn't ask. You really couldn't ask for a better group of people to be able to talk with. We'll take some more. We have some more questions from our students, but we also have a chance for you to join in. Again, the number to call for you is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org, and we're going to hold off for just a second on questions from our students, because Alan Green Bay had a question about Michigan. Why did Michigan get the Upper Peninsula, also known as DeYoup? After all, it touches Wisconsin and not the rest of Michigan. And we kind of talked about that a little bit, and there was some horse trading that went on, and I believe there was some battles going on among Michigan, Indiana, and Illinois, and Wisconsin. Wisconsin was originally going to get the DeYoup part, and we lost out in some horse trading. And if you another later history, if you go back to the 1970s, there was some talk of people in northern Wisconsin and northern Michigan who were a little upset with how things were going government wise, and there were a few people who wanted to make a new state, and they wanted to combine northern Wisconsin and northern Michigan, and I can't remember the name. Jill Nadeau, do you remember the name they were going to call it?
Of course, it was Superior, Larry. Oh. Superior. And the problem with, I believe it was a trade-off with Michigan and Ohio.
Only Michigan
was the reason why that the UP was created and given to Michigan. Very complicated.
Yeah, it was I took some classes in that, but those classes were a long time ago. And I was having some trouble dredging it up from my memory. Well, okay. Let's take another question from our students now. And this one, by the way, we're going to switch gears a little bit and turn to agriculture. Agriculture is really the heart of Wisconsin in so many ways, from our lifestyles to our economy. Jacob and Violet as well want to know more about how that came to be. So let's go there.
Hi, my name is Jacob. Why is Wisconsin called the Dairy State?
Hi, my name is Violet, and my question is, when and how did Wisconsin get all of our cows?
All right, Susan, we'll start with you.
All right, so originally when settlers arrived to Wisconsin, the Euro-Americans coming from the east or coming from Canada or coming up from the south, do you think Wisconsin looked the way it looked today? No. What kind of trees were predominant in Wisconsin? It was an oak savanna. So can you imagine these settlers coming with their tools of the time and having to clear these oak savannas to try and farm? But they did, because our soil was so rich that this area of the Midwest became known as the breadbasket as we started growing wheat. And in 1860, Wisconsin had its largest production of wheat in its history ever. But back then, farmers didn't know a lot about crop rotation and all the nutrients that they needed to continue to grow wheat. And then there was a bug that was black with red legs that came in, and it loved to eat the wheat fields. It was called the chinch bug. So all of these things combined, we had a failure of the wheat crop in the 1870s. So some of these settlers, like I said, coming from the eastern part of the United States, coming from upstate New York and coming from Pennsylvania, a lot of German heritage, they came from families that used to farm and used to have dairy cows. Now, earlier in Wisconsin, like one farmer would have a cow for their own consumption of dairy right there on their farm. But to diversify their agriculture, they started these dairy farms. And they started, producing lots of milk. And we can actually thank the dairy industry for all of the wonderful road system and roads that we have today. Because with the lack of refrigeration, this milk had to get places fast or it would spoil. And that's why we also have a lot of what type of factories in our area? What is Wisconsin known for?
My name is Bree, and it's known for cheese.
Yes, it is. It's known for cheese. Ronica, can you
tell me? What a great name, Bree.
Yes,
Bree. Talk about cheese.
Ronica, I'm going to put you on the spot. How many types of cheese do you think Wisconsin produces today?
50.
It's a lot more than that. Anyone else give a guess?
About 1,000.
We are known for about 600 types of cheese being produced just in Wisconsin alone. And so that's why we are known for the Dairy State, but it's also because of the University of Wisconsin and the extension system. All these people, Stephen Babcock and William Hoard, were all kind of coming together, the perfect storm, to create this industry and to learn the science behind it and come up with the different mechanisms to help make cheese and the dairy industry safer and make it transportable and just make it one of the backbones of our economy. And getting to the cows, so we talked about this earlier, the cow, the Holstein is our state cow, but Holstein, they're known for their mass production of milk, but do we only see Holstein cows in Wisconsin when you're driving around our roads here? What other kind of cows do we have in Wisconsin?
Beef and
what are some of the different breeds of cows?
Different breeds of milk cows.
Milking Shorthorns and Brown Swiss.
Yes, Brown Swiss.
Still a couple more out there.
Dairy.
All right, let's see from Jacob.
Guernseys and Jerseys.
Yes. And yes. So the Jersey cow. So the Holstein makes a type of milk. They make different types of milk, believe it or not. And the Holstein is the cow that most of the cheese is made from in the state of Wisconsin and also shipped across our country. But the Jersey cow actually produces milk that has a very high butterfat content. And so a lot of the butter that we get out of Wisconsin is made from the milk that comes from the Jersey cows. So
there we go. And there was some great research done, too, at the University of Wisconsin. There were some agronomists that really thought alfalfa would be a good crop to grow. And alfalfa turns out to be a pretty good food for dairy cows, too. And corn, of course, that was here already, became a staple because of winter. And so all of our corn would be stored in silos, or would be stored as silage. And the University Department of Agricultural Engineering came up with silos. And there was some discussion and there was some resistance to silos because there was some fermentation going on in the silo. And some farmers thought that it would hurt their cows. And so it took a while for silos to be accepted here in the state. Some of it had to do with, I think, some work done by Extension, as Susan was talking about earlier. So let's take an email next. Leah wonders, this is a question about the Historical Society. How do you choose your locations and how many are there? And also, are new ones ever added?
That's a great question. Yes, new ones are added. So our headquarters is located at State Street, at the bottom of State Street in Madison. And then there are 12 historic sites across the state. I manage 4 of them in southwestern Wisconsin, including Pendarvis here in Mineral Point. In 2013, we actually added one of our latest site, and it is Black Point Estates and Gardens. It's located on Geneva Lake in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. And it is a summer home of a beer baron out of Chicago. So how does a site become a site? Usually it is a civic group or a family or an organization that feels that this location or this building is very important to our state's history and has contacted the Wisconsin Historical Society, feeling that the Wisconsin Historical Society would be the best stewards to operate and to safeguard the collections, objects, and the buildings of these sites. And that's how we got Black Point in 2013.
There we go. You can join in, too, as you listened to the program today and have a question about Wisconsin's history or about our state, or maybe you've got a little factoid you'd want to put out there about your own community. We'll welcome your calls. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. Ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And we have some other questions that we could probably, you know, there were a lot of great questions that our youngsters ask, some of which I don't think we have the answer for. For example, someone wanted to know how many books there are in the state. I do not know how many books there are. I think Susan has the answer right on the tip of her tongue. No, she's laughing at me. How many books do you think there are in the state? Oh, we got a lot of hands up here among our students. So let's just see how many books there are in the state. Millions is probably
at least 300,000 to 500,000 books.
3 billion.
2 million.
All right. So we've got everything from 3.2 billion down to 1 million or so. 200,000 was the range. I don't think anybody in the state could answer that question. Maybe somebody at the State Historical Society might have an answer, but we don't. Well, here's another one. Where are the most popular places to visit in Wisconsin? And I think I know the answer to this one. Yeah, let's go.
Milwaukee.
Probably
probably the most national, probably the most popular places like national parks or like the Wisconsin Dells or places like that.
Yeah, I think
Green Bay,
the capital of our state, Madison.
Those are all good answers. And some of them, it depends a little bit on how you, well, we got one more. Right in the front row here, we have
the Great Lakes.
See if you and what's common to all those places? You know what's common to all those places? They're all wonderful places. They're interesting places. They're pretty places. You learn a lot about the state. You learn a lot. You know, you go to Lake Michigan. You'll learn a lot about the fish there. There are so many wonderful places in our state to visit. And Jeff in Maquantico has a question for us. Chet?
Hello, it's Chet.
Hi.
I heard, I'm a tree man, I like to climb trees, and I heard that if a squirrel, a long time ago, if a squirrel jumped into a tree at Lake Michigan, he can walk all the way across the state without touching the ground. There were that many trees across the state. I just want to know if that's true.
Well, it depends on how far back you went. It depends on how far back you went. But if you went before the time of white settlers coming to the state, I would bet you might not be able to go straight across the state, Tara, but you could probably get there by zigzagging around a little bit, don't you think? Yeah, she said, yeah, I think that would be the case, but I think it would have to be before white settlement. Mm-hmm. Let's take a question from Susie in New Berlin. Hi. Are you there?
Hello?
That doesn't sound like Susie from New Berlin.
Hello?
Hi, Susie.
Hi.
And what's your question?
Okay. I was just saying that I noticed that you said the young fourth grade students, and they're actually old fourth grade students. They're almost fifth graders by now. But my question is, do we know how many fourth grade students there are in the state of Wisconsin by any chance?
We have you know what, Susie? We have a bunch of our fourth graders that are raising their hands to answer that.
100,000. A lot.
Probably somewhere in the billions.
A lot.
About 3,000.
Who knows?
I think we're closer to 100,000 than we are to 3,000, for sure. And kindergarten has its roots in Wisconsin, does it not? Susan, you probably can talk about that a little bit.
Yes, the name of the, I believe it's, you know, German influence in Wisconsin, Watertown, Wisconsin, mm-hmm. I believe, is where the first kindergarten was started in our state.
Yes, exactly right. So thank you for that question, Susie. Let's go to Carol in Appleton next. Carol, hi.
Hi. This is Carol Laybourne. That's my maiden name. And some of my ancestors settled in the area that is the strip in the northern end of Ohio, which was traded to Michigan as the result of the Michigan-Ohio War, which was in 1835 and 1836. And it was called the Toledo War, and that's why the UP is part of Michigan, and the strip that runs east-west along the top of Ohio is part of Ohio. It's the result of the Toledo War.
Well, you learn something new every day. or maybe relearn in my case. I think I've gotten that at one point along the way. Well, we had another question here about homes in Wisconsin. And somebody wondered, what is the oldest home in Wisconsin? Anybody have an answer to that?
About 500 years old.
Well, probably, let's see. We'll get one more, and then Susan's probably got an answer for us.
Probably about 600. 5,000.
All right. Well, so we're getting lots of different ones here. Susan, what do you think?
So I'm going through my filing cabinet of historic preservation history, and I'm sure I'm going to get this wrong, but I believe that one of the oldest Euro-American built structures in Wisconsin still exists outside of Kaukauna by the Grigon family, an early French fur trade family, and I believe you can still visit it today as a historic house museum.
And when was it again? No.
It would be, it's early, late 1700s, early 1800s, when we could finally have Euro-American actually buying land, because, of course, the treaty system is what set up the ownership of land for the Euro-Americans coming to Wisconsin.
All right. Well, you know, we had over 50 questions that came from our fourth graders, and it's such a pleasure for me and for all of our crew at Wisconsin Public Radio to be here today to at least get a crack at answering. Well, we answered quite a few of those questions, and I'm sorry we didn't have time to give to get to everyone. But when we saw the questions when they arrived at our Wisconsin group, and they saw how great those questions were, they thought, you know what, we've just got to get out to Mineral Point and talk with the students and get a couple of experts like we have here today to answer as many of those questions as we could. And so I want to give a big thanks to all the teachers and all of the students at Mineral Point. You've been wonderful. And as well to our two experts, Tara Tindall, the Native American teacher leader at the Madison Metropolitan School District, and to Susan Kaya Slusser, the Southwest Sites Regional Director for the Wisconsin Historical Society. Didn't they do a great job? And you know what? Thank you all for listening on the radio and for watching us on our Ideas Network Facebook page. I'm Larry Mueller. And you, my friends, are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.